What's up, you guys? Welcome to the Katie C. Sawyer podcast. I'm your host, Katie, and today serves as our first ever mini episode. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Mike Calabrese last week to discuss sail fishing in Southern Florida. And today I've brought on two of my favorites from the Billfish Foundation to follow up on the chat I had with Mike, Peter Chaibongzai and TJ Morrell. Thanks so much for sitting down with us today, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
So our chat last week with Mike touched on a couple things. We talked about kite fishing South Florida. We spoke about the differentiation between kite fishing and trolling. And we talked about why kite fishing in Florida is the predominant style of fishing. So in our conversation, we went to a little point where we discussed sailfish populations throughout the East Coast from South Carolina to Isla Mujeres in the Yucatan, inclusive of Southern Florida and the Gulf of Mexico. So we brought on the experts today to talk about what the tagging program with the Billfish Foundation has shown us, what we know thanks to these tags, and the questions we might still have. So the predominant question, Peter and TJ, was that if these fish in Southern Florida are moving north to south and the season in Florida is January, February, March, April, more like February, March, April, and the season south of there in the Yucatan is before that, like December, January, February, are these two different bodies of fish? And do the sailfish go as far as other billfish go in their migrations, generally speaking?
Those are great questions from you and Mike. Mike, who's been a longtime friend of TBF, I think for over a decade, and probably has one of the best products out there. I remember when
That's Firetails.
Firetails, excuse me, nice plug there. He has a great product, he really does. And I remember when he first started with that. And it's really taken off, and kudos to him on that product. But that's a great question. Going back to what you're asking, if these sailfish move a lot, or if they're more residential, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And what we've seen through some of the tagging that we've done over the past 30 years, and really just in Isla and South Florida, in Isla, it's probably been the past 10, 15 years, so not as much as South Florida, but what we've seen is they actually travel quite a bit. I was lucky enough, as well as a former colleague of mine, Andrew Cox, we were able to go over to Isla to tag probably 3 or 4 years in a row, just traditional tags, on the qualifier, Finn Gaddy's boat, when he was at Enrique's marina there. And a lot of the locals, as well as a lot of the boats that were coming from Texas or North Carolina, they had all thought that these were very residential fish. That Site Videlli was right there. But what was really interesting to note is that we had told them it could be for some, but for others it might not be, because we had historical records of showing sailfish going all along the coast. As well as going all the way from Florida all the way to, I believe, like Grenada and further down south in the Caribbean.
How many miles is that?
Thousands. Yeah, at least 1,000 to 1,500. And we're happy to share that with your viewers and your community following this, that we can happily bring that up and you can show it to them. The other thing that we noticed was, you know, when we started tagging, going back to the story about going with on the qualifier, was we had a hunch that while most of the sailfish were going to be found consistently in the Yucatan, we didn't believe that all of them stayed there. And our hunch was correct. It was verified when Andrew and I went tagging, like I said, for those several years in a row. And actually, one or two of Andrew and mine were actually recaptured either in Cuba or right here in Miami. I will definitely send that over to you.
Interesting.
And we thought that was really surprising. We showed the qualifier and a couple other boats about that. And again, do some fish stay there? Sure. But do they all stay there? No. Clearly. We just did some satellite tagging here in the second week of March. Right here off of South Florida. And a lot of that work that we're looking, a lot of the data that we're hoping to collect from those fish is to see where they go. And, you know, not only in terms of migration patterns, but how deep they're going and so forth. There's a lot of great information from these satellite tags. And what we try to do is try to answer those questions that you and Mike had, really. And the only way to do that is to participate in this program. And luckily, we had some satellite tags that we wanted to deploy at, right here in South Florida. And TJ, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is one of the first times that we've done this, at least in the last 20 years, to do. Oh, go ahead.
When you say done this, you mean satellite tagging specifically sailfish?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's interesting, because you guys have satellite tagged other species of billfish in the past, correct? What are some satellite tags that you've deployed? Actually, let's do a little brief. I'm just going to give a brief synopsis to the listener. We've touched on tags already this season. We're going to get a little bit more into them down the season. But specifically with the Billfish Foundation, we're talking about what we call spaghetti tags. And the spaghetti tags are going to give you a point A to point B type information data point, right? So you find out where the fish was tagged, and then when the fish is recaptured, if it's recaptured, you get the end point. So we don't know what goes on between those two points. Satellite tagging gives you all the information in between, but it's much more expensive endeavor and project, so it requires funding. But that's the differentiation between the two. Now, it's so cool that you guys just did some satellite tagging off of Southern Florida. How many did y'all deploy?
5 successfully.
That's awesome. That's super cool. I'm excited. And so is it going to be like a year-long cycle for these tags?
I think they ranged in duration from 1 month to a year. So okay. We will get them at the varying times throughout the year. They'll pop off and we'll be able to start collecting and analyzing the data from there.
Awesome. So what other billfish have you tagged with satellite tags and where?
Ooh, Peter might know more about that one, about the specific trips that we've gone on.
So we are pretty consistent in trying to tag blue marlin off of the Gulf of Mexico, just because it's an area always of concern for us. And we obviously have a huge community there. And just like we had talked about before, is that we're still constantly learning about the fish there. We've also done white marlin as well as striped marlin. We did a striped marlin expedition last year, or I guess maybe a year and a half ago, with one of our sponsors, Costa and Mag Bay.
Isn't there something coming up in April, end of April? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're going to be, or I shouldn't say we, the fly fishing film tour is happening right now, and one of the locations they're going to be showing it is here in Fort Lauderdale. And the video and the movie coming from that trip in December is going to be highlighted in the film tour. So it should be really neat. Go ahead.
From your striped marlin satellite tagging trip.
Yeah, it was absolutely epic. So anyone who's billfished before understands how much fun that is, but what we did, or what Costa did, is they brought in a whole bunch of fly fishing pros. And so we went to Mag Bay, took the 6-hour drive to get to San Carlos. Then we took another 4-hour putt in a Panga out to Potato Bank and Mag Bay. And
it's not an easy fishery to get to.
It is not an easy, but it is well worth it. And we were in small little pangas, you know, maybe 25-foot pangas. They were great pangas, but, you know, it's different than being on a, you know, 70-foot sport fisher.
Definitely.
But it was transcendent. I mean, that's the best word I have for it. It was amazing where we were able to satellite tag on the fly 15 fish in less than 24 hours. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So that.
So you guys have. So you've sat tagged striped marlin, you've sat tagged white marlin, you've sat tagged blue marlin. A majority of your satellite tagging has gone towards blue marlin, correct?
That's correct. And then one of the future focuses that we're going to do is more white marlin. And we're probably going to start doing some swordfish as well again. One species that we'd love to do more of, it's just not as prevalent here in the U.S., is black marlin. So That's something I would love to find some funding for. We're constantly
Now,
learning.
that's not as prevalent in the US, you guys, because black marlin are only found in the Pacific, and the water on the northwestern side of the US is a little chilly for blacks for the most part.
Yep.
But they're extremely prevalent in Central America, as well as, of course, Australia is the world-renowned black marlin bite, and you see them in Hawaii as well. Sorry to interrupt you, Peter. Just wanted to give a little bit of foreground.
No, that's great. I mean, my like bucket list for TBF would be to, get some satellite tags in those juveniles off of Fraser. That would be
Can
that's
I
like a,
come?
yeah, that's
Can
like
I
a dream.
come?
Yeah, that's an absolute
Sign me
dream.
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the crew. I know the crew. Let's
Yeah.
go.
Yep.
That's fun. All right, cool. So back to the sailfish. Here we go. How many approximately? I know this is off the top of your head and it's kind of an unfair question to ask, but with your recapture data, would you say a majority of sailfish are in the same general area in which they were tagged when they're recaptured?
That's a great question. TJ, you might know a little bit more than I do, but from my hunch, I would say, depending on what you're talking about region, if you're talking about within like a 200-mile radius of where they originally recaptured, yes. But do we have the outliers? Of course. I don't think that in the past couple of years we've had too many go beyond maybe 200 miles of where they originally tagged. But if we were to look historically, like I said, there are sailfish that have traveled quite a distance.
That's so interesting because I always thought of sailfish as such a like a central population. Like they don't go far. In my
No.
mind, the sailfish stay pretty close, then the white and striped marlins have a little bit larger radius, and then the blue marlin have a little bit larger radius than that. Am I right when I say that, or as far as we know?
I mean, so this is the cool thing about what we're doing all the time is like, so yes, you're right, but as we've said before, we're just constantly building off the knowledge that we have. And that's why we're trying to collect more data to, make these hunches more than a hunch, to solidify our knowledge of where these fish are found. The fact that we have we have definitely verified that and confirmed that some of these fish do travel outside of their, ranges is really neat. Whether that's the sailfish that are being tagged in or caught in Isla and captured again in Miami. It's just things that we're constantly learning. And your hunch is correct. I mean, that's what I had thought originally as well, is these are more social. They're going to want to hang out together. They're going to hang out wherever the food is. And then I spoke to a buddy of mine who's a scientist, and he's like, Peter, you just said it. They're going to go wherever the food is, and they're going to follow the currents as well as the sea surface temperature. They're going to follow wherever the bait's going. And just like that, they could travel, thousands and thousands of miles. And like we had said before, or maybe TJ said this before, is, we have a point A and point B with those traditional tags, but they're traveling thousands of miles, even if they're recaptured within 50 miles or even 5 miles of the recapture and the original tagging location, they could have traveled thousands of miles in between. It just happens to be that case. That's why I think a lot of the work that we're doing now, especially the satellite tagging that we did last week with Old Number 7 and Blue Water Movements, is going to be really important to see where these fish are going and how they fared.
Oh, it's super
So,
cool that you guys are putting out these sat tags. TJ?
oh, I was gonna say, yeah, the vast majority when we do the recapture data for sailfish show that they're pretty much up and down the coast of Florida, because we do like to show the recaptures to our community and to the people that support us, just as a nice tangible way to highlight the data and what we're doing in an easy to comprehend manner. But we do have those outliers. But to me, this is a perfect example of asking a question and being able to actually go back and look it up. Because even if we don't know the exact number, and we couldn't give you a percentage of exactly how many sailfish populations are in X, Y, and Z, this is an amazing research opportunity for us to go back and say, okay, we have a question, we have the data to support it, and now we can actually compile it, put the people together, and provide that information to governments, regulation agencies, et cetera, or just interested, research parties. And so that's, to me, the coolest aspect of this, is that you don't need to know, but we have the resources to be able to get you the answer. And that's why, collecting this data has been so important, and why our database has continuously proven to be such a valuable resource.
So well said, TJ. So well said. Now, how much of the data collected for you guys is done by recreational fishermen?
I mean, I would say 99%. I'm going to leave that last 1% for those instances where we do have some commercial guys that do tag for us, like specifically the buoy fishermen, swordfish buoy guys. Some of them have been fantastic. And then some of the other commercial guys, when they recapture, some of those fish do report back. But yeah, 99% of what we know in terms of data collection comes from the recreational sport fishing community and their interest in ownership of this resource, right? So
That's awesome. So, you heard it here, you guys. The Billfish Foundation has a tagging program. It's super easy to be a part of, and we can see every day that it benefits the community as a whole. And like TJ just touched on, is an excellent opportunity to get more science and data out there for better management in the future for any upcoming study. So you guys be a part of that. And do y'all have anything else you want to add? I think that that wraps up this little mini episode.
No, like I said, I think the questions that you and Mike had are fantastic. And these are the kinds of things that we would love to answer. So if we would just say, if anyone has questions in regards to similar to what you and Mike had, please feel free to reach out to us. Again, as TJ said, and we've tried to say to many people, our database is open source. It is fully transparent. So we have a request, a way to request the data, a very simple form on our website that you can fill out, and we're happy to provide that information.
That's sick. You guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having
Of
us.
course. Thank you, Katie.
All right, y'all. You heard it on KDC Sawyer Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to like and subscribe. If you have any more questions, feel free to leave them in the comments, and we'll see if we can do another mini episode with the Billfish Foundation or whoever else you might want to talk to. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to chase your wild.